Please turn your Bibles to the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth. I'm going to read the first chapter for us. Even though I'm interested in the whole book, and it's short enough for us to reflect on the whole of it. But verse 1 of chapter 1 reads, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the women survived her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband.' So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, 'Surely, we will return with you to your people.' But Naomi said, 'Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters, go, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight, and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters. For it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me.' Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, 'Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.' But Ruth said, 'Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death pass you and me.' When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. Now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. And it happened, when they had come to Bethlehem, that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, 'Is this Naomi?' But they said to them, 'Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me.' I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again, empty. Why do you call me Naomi? Since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. May the Lord bless the reading of His holy word. Now I was going to resume the series on James tonight, but decided to hold it off for a little while longer so I can say something particularly about the spate of affliction that have befallen several of our members in this church. And then, as you know, we will be voting in a general election soon. I would also like to address myself to that situation over the next few weeks. But tonight, I want to think about the spate of affliction that have befallen several of our members. As I look around at the church, I see brethren who have lost several dear ones to death. Some have lost dear ones in very quick succession in the same family. I also see brothers and sisters who have been afflicted by illness, cancer, and other such problems, afflicted by old age, by job losses, and other bad circumstances in life. And all of these things have of course happened in a short space of time, and only God knows what this is doing to our faith. One might be tempted to think that we are under attack as a church. I have heard at least two or so people put it in precisely those terms. We are under attack. The question is, does God have something to say about this? I believe He does, and I believe that in the book of Ruth, we have His word to us when we find ourselves in such situations. Ruth is a very important book. John Piper once said this about it. He said, "It is a story for people who wonder where God is when one tragedy after another attacks their faith." He said furthermore, "It's a story for people who wonder whether a life of integrity in tough times is worth it. It is a story for people who can't imagine that anything great could ever come to their ordinary lives of faith." So it's a very important book. It's not without reason then that I'm drawing your attention to it. Now, before we delve into it, some comments on the context of the book will be appropriate. According to Ruth 1 and verse 1, the story took place during the time of the judges. This was a 400-year period after Israel entered the promised land under the leadership of Joshua. And this was also before there were kings in Israel. The land was ruled by people called judges. The book of Judges, as you know, comes just before Ruth in our English Bibles. And you can see from its very last verse, what sort of period this was. Judges 21 and verse 25 says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. These were the days. A very dark time in Israel. People would sin. God would send enemies against them. They would cry out for help. God would mercifully rise upon a judge and deliver them. Again and again, people would rebel. God would come and help them. For a moment, they would appear repentant, only to go back to their sins. Again and again and again, they did what was right in their own eyes. And from outward appearances, it would have appeared that God's purposes for righteousness and glory were failing. And what the book of Israel, rather Ruth does for us is to give us a glimpse of the hidden work of God during the worst of times. Things were dark and hopeless in the land. But behind this darkness and hopelessness, God was at work. So if you like, one of the main messages of this little book is that God is at work, even in the worst of times. We may suffer loss in the form of loved ones, in the form of jobs. It may appear sometimes that God's blessing is not upon us, because what we are sensible of during those times is pain and darkness and hopelessness. And the message we need to hear in a time such as this is that God, in fact, is at work. It may not be very clear, but He is. And this is really the point I wish to share with us this evening. Well, let us open up this matter by, first of all, observing the bad times in the book of Ruth. The bad times in the book of Ruth. And the bad times relate mainly to the experience of a lady called Naomi. We read about her at the beginning of chapter 1. It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. His name was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi. Now, there are a number of things we are told about Naomi. First, she lived during a time when there was a famine in Judah. She and her husband lived through that famine. And it is that famine that forced them out of Judah into the land of Moab. The second thing we notice that when they went to the land of Moab, they were not going to a land that was flourishing with godly men and women and the blessings that follow upon godliness. Rather, Moab was a pagan land with foreign gods. It was a land full of idolatry. The third thing we see is that She had childless daughters-in-law. The Lord had blessed her and her husband with sons, but these sons did not have children. And childlessness in the cultures of the time was almost a curse. And she had to live through that. And then she lost her husband. We read in verse 3. Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. She was left and her two sons. She didn't just lose her husband. We are also told in verse 5 that she lost her two sons. Blow after blow, tragedy after tragedy, difficulty after difficulty. That is what she knew. And that is probably how you feel as you look at your own life. Blow after blow, difficulty after difficulty, tragedy after tragedy, loss after loss, pain after pain. When will this end? That is your constant cry. Bad times in Ruth. Bad times in your life. Now what? Well, that brings us to our second point. The response of Naomi to the bad times. How did she respond? Well, there is no doubt that Naomi acknowledged the sovereignty of God. You hear this, for example, when she counsels her daughters-in-law in verse 9. She says, "The Lord grant that you may find rest, my daughters, each in the house of her husband." So she kissed them and they lifted up their voices and wept. So she still had a consciousness of God. She acknowledged the sovereignty of God. But that notwithstanding, we notice two things in regard to her response. First, she felt hopeless about the situation. And to feel like this, one might say, is quite natural, isn't it? You've lost a husband. You've lost sons. And those sons haven't left you with any grandchildren. So she felt she had nothing. It was quite normal to feel the sense of hopelessness she felt. And she's left with these two daughters-in-law. And according to the culture of the time, these were her daughters. These were her responsibility. Their relationship did not end with the death of her sons. They remained her responsibility. So what does she do with them? She had nothing to give them. She couldn't give them sons to marry. She had nothing to give them. She felt, at least while she was in Moab, that she didn't have any close relation that she could introduce them to. She felt a sense of hopelessness. Another thing, she felt that she had become the incarnation of bitterness itself. Listen to how she addresses herself in chapter 1 and verse 20. If I may read from verse 19, the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. That is her and her daughter-in-law Ruth. And it happened when they had come to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?" But she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Do not call me happy. Do not call me delightful. Call me Mara." And Mara means bitterness. You remember how when the children of Israel were sojourning from Egypt to Canaan, how in the course of their journey they came upon a place, this is in the wilderness, and it had water. And when they tried to drink that water, they found it was bitter. So they called the place Mara. Well, Naomi says, this time round, "Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Call me Mara. Don't call me pleasant or sweet or delightful. Call me Mara." And she explains why they must call her that. She says, "I went out full. When I left Judah to go to Moab, I went full. I had a husband. I had children. But look at me now. I've come back home empty. Why do you call me pleasant? Why do you call me sweet? Since the Lord has testified against me and the Lord has afflicted me, no, call me Mara." This is how she responds. Is that how you are responding? Is that how you have responded to difficult situations in your life? You have become bitter. You have become perpetually angry. God says you should not let the sun go down and you are still angry. But you have been angry for weeks, for months, for years. You are Mara. She doesn't tell us what it is she was bitter with. But it would seem to me, reading between the lines, that she was bitter with God. For she says, "The Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. And the Almighty has afflicted me." She therefore had something of bitterness toward God, toward the Almighty. And there is a lesson here. When we have decided that God is against us, we can usually become bitter. And as we will see in a moment, we can exaggerate our hopelessness and our bitterness against God. We can become so bitter that we stop seeing the rays of light, the rays of hope that God so often gives to us. And Ruth did have rays of hope, as I will be demonstrating in a moment. She just chose not to see those rays. Even while she was in Moab, there were rays of hope, but she just chose not to see them. Let me hurry on and share with you the third point, which is the mercy and the wonder of God in Ruth. These, if you like, are the rays of hope that Ruth should have seen even while she was going through affliction. First, she had Ruth, the gift of Ruth. When was Ruth given to her? Not in Judah, in Moab. And Ruth was a very special person. When you look at verse 16 carefully, you will find that something had happened to Ruth in Moab. She was a Moabite woman. She was born and reared in this pagan and idolatrous country. And yet God had clearly done a work in her soul. And this is made very clear here in verse 15. Naomi is trying to convince Ruth that she shouldn't go with her back to Judah. She's a Moabite. This is our country. This is our land. Her family is there. She should stay there. She didn't have to come with her. She was releasing her, as it were, to remain with her people, among her people, and perhaps to find a husband there. How does Ruth respond in verse 16? She says, "Entreat me not to leave you, or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." She had come to know Naomi's God, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob. She had come to believe in the God of Naomi. And she was willing to have the God of Naomi be her God. This is astonishing. She was prepared to leave her own family and land, to follow Naomi, to follow Naomi's God. She was prepared to live a life of widowhood and childlessness for the rest of her life. She was prepared to go to an unknown land and live with a new people and new customs and be exposed to a new language. And she was prepared to die with Naomi. She was prepared, in other words, not to return to her own country, to her own people. In Naomi, we have a picture of God's ideal woman, don't we? And God gave this woman to Naomi. This was a mercy that Naomi could not see in her moment of bitterness. There is a second gift that God gives, and it comes in the form of a man called Boaz. We read about him in chapter 2. In verse 1, there was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him, in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house. And then Boaz has a conversation with her. Boaz was a relative of Elimelech, who was Naomi's husband. We are also told that he was a man of wealth, but more importantly, he was a man of God. He was a man of God. To cut a long story short, this man of God developed an interest in the woman of God, Ruth. She became his wife. And in that way, God blessed Ruth for her faithfulness. Which brings us to a third gift given to Naomi. We'll come back to Naomi. The Lord opened Ruth's womb. Now, while in Moab, Ruth's womb was closed, just like Orpah's womb had been closed. Now here she is in Judah. The Lord opened her womb, and she had a child. The Lord opened her womb, and she had a child. And I want you to notice this in chapter 4, verse 16. "Then Naomi took the child, laid him on her bosom, and became a nurse to him. Also, the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, 'There is a son born to who?'" I want you to notice that verse. 17. "There is a son born to who?" It doesn't say born to Ruth, but born to Naomi. And they called his name Obed. Born to Naomi. Now, just A little before that, Naomi had been saying, she went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Really? Of course not. The Lord has blessed Naomi. Remember, Ruth is still tied to her. It is her who gave Ruth in marriage to Boaz. The child born to them was her grandchild. It was hers. No, the Lord didn't bring her back empty. The Lord gave her a grandson. What an important and significant grandson. Look at how verse 17 ends of chapter 4. There is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. And then we read these words. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. The fourth gift we must observe, therefore, is the provision of a Messiah through this line that has come about in the birth of Obed. Obed became the father of Jesse, and Jesse became the father of David. And the name of David carries with it the hope of the Messiah, because the Lord Jesus Christ was going to come into the world through the line of David. So the hope of the world is going to come about through the descendants of Obed. Is this coming back home with nothing? Is this coming back home empty? It is coming back home with the hope of the world right there on her shoulders. So let's come back to what the message of Ruth, therefore, is indicating to us. Ruth was written to help us see the signposts of the grace of God in our lives, and to help us trust His grace even when the going is tough, even when the clouds are thick, even when we can't see the road ahead. We can only see the darkness and we can only feel the bitterness. These things cloud our view of the mercies of God. We can't see those mercies. We can't see that path. But it doesn't mean those mercies are not there. God is in all our bitter providences. That is the point of the book of Ruth. Let me summarize the lessons. Number one, God continues to be sovereign and to rule over our lives sovereignly, even when we are in moments of difficulty and darkness and pain and agony. The providences we may be facing may be dark. We may be feeling that God is dealing with us bitterly. But it doesn't mean God is not ruling over our lives and directing them in such a way that we end at those points and positions where we must experience His blessing. The third, or is it the second point I want us to see, is that he works all things for the good of those who love Him, who are called according to His purpose. He works all things for the good of those who love Him. Naomi, however weak her love for God was, still loved God. So did Ruth. While they were in Moab, the situation just seemed hopeless for them. Completely hopeless. But as things turn out, it's clear God had been with them all along. And God worked everything for their good in the end. That's what He does for His people. The third thing we see, and this is an important lesson, big things turn on small hinges, like you have a big door swinging on small hinges. And there were small things that happened in the life of Naomi, in the life of Ruth, apparently small things, but oh, they brought about such big things. The death of a husband, the death of sons-in-law, a famine. They all direct them back to Judah, where they meet Boaz. A relationship starts. A child is born. A line is continued. It didn't begin with Obed. It's continued. And that eventually leads to the birth of the Messiah. Apparently, small things bringing about big things. You may be going through small experiences, but who knows what God may do with those experiences. You may not see the way ahead yet, but it will come. And God will bless you. Let's learn, finally, the fact that if we trust in the sovereign goodness and mercy of God, He will take away our bitterness. He will take away our sorrows. He will once again make us Naomis and take away the Mara. It's about trusting God, even in those dark providences, even in that bitterness. It's about trusting God. It's about not losing sight of Him. It's about continuing to see Him, even in the darkness. That is what will lead to pleasantness and sweetness and remove the mara, perhaps remove it forever. Well, if you have experienced frowning providences, whatever they are, all is not lost. You still have a God who can turn you into a Naomi. May God bless you and make your burdens lighter. Amen.